You should be all set.
You know, one thing I'm not.
Yeah. And we're going to go ahead and start with the roll call.
Mayor Saavedra.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Jimenez.
Present.
Councilmember Belton.
Here.
Councilmember Ceja. Councilmember Duval. Councilmember Garcia.
Here.
Councilmember Pettit.
Excellent. We were informed that Councilman Ceja was not going to be able to make it tonight, and I will entertain a motion. Great, we have a motion on the floor by Mayor Pro Tem Jimenez, seconded by Councilman Garcia to excuse Councilman Ceja from tonight's meeting. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. We also need to make an adjustment to tonight's agenda to have the employee introduction. So our officer wasn't able to make it tonight. So I'll entertain a motion just to postpone the introduction for March the 13th. Great. We have a motion on the floor by Councilman Pettit, seconded by Councilman Garcia, to postpone Officer Montelongo's introduction to March the 13th. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Great. Motion passes. We'll move on to approve the agenda as edited. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll second that.
Great. We have a motion on the floor by Councilman Pettit, seconded by Councilman Garcia, to approve tonight's agenda as edited. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Motion passes. We'll move on to public comment. The City Council welcomes public attendance at council meetings. This meeting is for the conduct of regular city business. At this time, citizen comments and inquiries about agenda business or general city matters are encouraged. If you wish to address the City Council, please stand or raise a hand so that you can be called upon. After you are recognized, please come forward to the lectern, state your name and address for the public record. Your comments must be limited to 3 minutes or less. Please use the microphone. Great, we don't have anyone here this evening for public comment. So we'll move on to item 5, receive updates on top finished housing needs assessment. City Manager Zabel.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So tonight we have staff from YVCOG, which is the Yakima Valley Conference of Governments, here to give Council an update on the housing action plan that the city has contracted with YVCOG to perform. And from the housing action plan, we'll be able to determine some greater issues when we're working on our land use plan for accessory dwelling units and for density within our population. So Byron, I'll let you guys introduce yourselves. And do you want, if you'd like to sit at the table, that's fine, or the podium.
So we provided copies of these in the digital format to you. We've updated some things. I'll preface this by saying these are still a work in progress. There are a couple references to Grandview, which are obviously incorrect. All the numbers are right, but the name is wrong. Sir? And what this entails, I was in front of you for exactly one this past summer at some point in time, and gave a slideshow presentation on some of the early data that we were getting, and it was just kind of a number dump for you. And this is kind of polishing those numbers in our presentation. Then what the plan is just to quickly go through this with you.
Thank you.
And then let you know what our next steps are and what we'll be heading towards. Anybody else? So without further ado, is it easier to go on the screen, or with everybody having a paper copy, we can just talk about pages?
Yeah.
paper, so I won't steal it. Okay, so YVCOG has been contracted by Toppenish to create a housing action plan. And what a housing action plan is a document that provides a series of goals and policies with the bottom line of increasing the housing supply in Toppenish. Some of the things that we've been doing are looking at the census data, looking at historic trends as far as population growth, what the city's demographics are, what they have been, what housing construction has been. And from there, we're gonna take that information and see where the needs are. We've also been doing a lot of community outreach. So YVCOG is doing this for 6 different communities. And as part of the outreach efforts, we've gone to a number of different events, and Toppenish's response involvement rate is bar none the highest that we have. About 40% of all of our surveys that we've got countywide are from, and the last couple of documents in the packet are the survey responses to date. The survey is still open, but it gives you an idea of what your community members are saying they would like to see as far as the type of housing, how they feel the effort to create housing is going, who they feel is responsible for creating more housing in the community. So it's some really interesting responses and really, really good engagement. And it really takes a team, and I give kudos to Albert as well as Maria and Alma, and then some other folks working on the talk. So that being said, we can start opening the document. As I mentioned, it's a draft, so table of contents, page numbers aren't filled out yet. There's still some polishing that needs to be done. Page 4 is probably where you'll find some of the interesting information to start with. These are just a couple of the key findings that we get into a little bit further detail on further in the report. There is a housing shortage in Toppenish. We discuss vacancy rates for about 2%. Deal rates 5%. Housing prices are rising. Income in Toppenish is rising. Many of the households in Toppenish are cost burdened. Needs are greatest among low income households. Housing for people with special housing needs does not match demand. Toppenish needs more housing diversity. And then as a note, countywide, there's a shortage of seasonal farm worker housing that tends to impact a lot of housing needs for the residents of the community, because those homes cannot be used for that seasonal farm worker housing. Any questions on this page or comments? The next couple of pages are just kind of a glossary of what housing terminology may be. Then we get into the community profile on page 6. This is just a summary that we put together of the community. It's kind of just a short little narrative. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything that as city council you'd like to add or change with that, but is this, you know, draft, if there's anything, if you can go through this, if you want to, and I'll leave my cards, an email asking for something to be included or stricken or something like that, more than happy to do so. Page 7, we discuss the population. Right now we're estimated at about 8,800 people. The projected population increase, how we get to that number, it's a projection based off of a state agency working with Yakima County. So what the state agency, the Office of Financial Management does is it projects population growth for the state, then looks at the historic population in each of the counties and says of all the growth we're going to get, Yakima County will see this percentage of the entire population growth. So say that's 50,000 people. And the county looks at that and says, okay, within the county, the city of Yakima is going to see the majority of that growth, followed by Sunnyside and Grandview and Toppenish. So they divvy out a further subset of that population, and that's how we come up with this number. We have some information on breakdown of ages, breakdown on households, as far as owner-occupied, renter-occupied.
Why did you pick those ages? That's a huge number between 20 and 60.
So one of the ways that that is captured as well, I didn't pick the age bracket, but I think one of the ways that people do is working age. So it's minor is working age, you know, tending towards retirement, tending towards.
The households, you break down 61% are owner-occupied, 39% renter-occupied, number of people per home. A lot of this you've seen from the presentations. I'm just kind of seeing through it. But if there's any questions, please stop us and ask. That's why we're here. Household income and cost burden households. So the median income in the city of Coppenish is $57,268. Of that, the golden number for housing is supposed to be 30% of your income goes towards housing. So if you're an owner, that's your mortgage, that's your insurance, that's your taxes, that's your utilities. Everything's at 30%. If you're a renter, it's the same thing. It's your rent plus your utilities. We were looking, trying to find out what, you know, if there's a breakdown of that total 30%, if there's a magic number that utility should be, that mortgage should be, we couldn't find anything that's specific to breaking that out, that 30%. And without this being finalized, we'll continue to look for that and see if there's resources that the state may have, the Department of Commerce may have some information for us. But as we sit and talk today, we can look at that. That is really what we can do. On page 10, we're just going through the grants. So household is cost burden with housing if it's been more than that 30%, and it's extremely cost burden if it's more than 50% of that. So this is kind of a breakdown of those percentages where the homes are spending more than 30% at each age bracket.
Gracious brackets continuing to change with the way the market's going on, right?
Yeah.
It's like changing the way you
mentioned. Yeah. Yeah. And then last.
Yeah.
They're all moving different. Page 11, we discuss residents with special housing needs. So special housing needs are folks that may have disabilities, need help, seniors who need assistance, any plethora of different reasons. And this table here is a breakdown of those special housing needs. So there's one where it's low, very low, and extremely low income. So that's, I believe, where it's a 0 to 30, 30 to 50, and then 50 to 80. So of those income breakdowns, the total number of individual households that fall within that are about 1,400 households. And that's 59% of the population that's in that bracket for special housing needs. So a large number of community members in Toppenish do need special housing needs. And that's something that we'll look to address with the housing action. So the housing needs assessment is really just the combing of the data and finding out where the greatest need is. So when we're developing our plan to address specific needs within the community, we know where schools. The workforce profile, I'm going to step back and let Albert discuss this one. He put this part together.
All right. So I added a disclaimer at the beginning that this most of the data is collected before the pandemic. So workforce is looked entirely. Working with what we have and then getting some data. So what this looks at, I have a rundown of county, but that'll end up. That we oversee just because it's sort of a zoomed out view, but when we're looking at city employment trends, we're sort of comparing those to how the communities, industry sectors. On page 13, there's a point of breakdown for industries, and a lot of these are predictable, so healthcare, social, next section in this looks at the job housing ratio, which ideally falls between 7.5 and 1.9. And what this is a measurement of how many jobs exist in the community compared to the community. So ideally, you'll work. Despite this, still an enormous amount. Which is predictable. You also see the top initiatives that we have. While there is a fair number of community and it's a little graphic, I didn't put this together. Shows 1,800 people who came from the top industry for from Postgres, 29 from 600. Sectors, and then this data is unfortunately less specific than we would like from the department. All of South Central Washington County City. Those industry projections.
Starts the housing inventory. This is really a breakdown of the housing units by type. So one unit would be a single family detached home, one unit attached would be a common wall house, two units is a duplex, three, four units, those sorts of things. So you can see that the lion's share of the types of housing published are single family detached homes. The next graph down, the number of bedrooms, pretty self-explanatory of those housing units, how many bedrooms are in those units. No bedroom would be scale. Gap analyses, that's Albert.
Gap analysis just looks at the current housing that exists. And the projected housing and sort of, you know, there's a gap now, and then put the gap. So it's looking at this right now, this says there's a 2% vacancy rate and 2% vacant. In reality, however, as a number of households in the city that are classified as vacant,
5%. Currently, 59 more sale, 46 rental. On applications for population. Next, if we look at you can see in these trends just the last so please calculate. So you have relatively stable lines here, and even with the predictions for the upper and lower, especially like home value, the relative system. And so we're looking at that. At the end of this section on page 19, on table 5, this is sort of what the target would be when we're looking at homes that should be built. In each of these. So if you're looking at extremely low income, 31 of the 247 units should be extremely low. 56 for very low income, 76 for low income. One of the reasons that this bit is helpful is that we are looking at grants for serving these communities. This is what we did. So that's sort of the goal of this. Something that I think that so in this trend line, all we can do is take the previous data. I think if it just took the last 3 years,
it did turn around. I haven't heard anything renting for under 1200.
And that's something that
currently,
yeah, it's something I.
I wish it was until 2040, but there's no way. It really literally is like.
Right. Their projected population of county has 2035 was that.
I wanted to point that out because, like I said, I haven't heard it.
Byron, with that, in this being a draft, can we add another chart that shows, you know, more the actuals or update this?
So my hesitancy for doing that with just the last few years and right now is that trend line shoot. I mean, the growth in the last 2 or 3 years has skewed this substantially. And the fear is that 2025, all of a sudden it'd be 25. I don't want to scare them. And there is some, I mean, markets do this. There's probability that this will break itself, and it will still be high.
Would it be a census data source? It probably would be Zillow. It's something we could definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just need to make sure we take the source. Say, just the 2 years doesn't necessarily indicate a changing trend line, because I think there are a lot of building permits that are probably going to be in play, maybe not specific to Coppinish, but other communities where we've been seeing this rapid increase in house value and rents being charged. But I feel that within the next year or two, we've seen a lot of creates some stability in that price. So I don't know if I could predict that I'm sitting but I feel as though there's a good chance that prices will correct slightly if they don't correct at least stabilize.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we talked about was being able to use this information for grant funding. So it would seem like that would be something we would want to be able to show, that we have these higher rents that would help us to qualify for maybe some commerce or CDBG grants to help in that area.
We can add that, figure out. And this isn't the last time we've seen this.
Mm-hmm.
There's two more times we'll be in front of you. One's to show you the draft of the housing action plan that's going to be drafted after this. And then once again, we'll touch. So when we have the draft in front of you, we'll go through a similar thing where we're going to be looking at some of the different strategies, which I've included here, and including those that would be most appropriate for Coppinish to look at. And then if it's something that you don't feel is needs more emphasis, is it that change? On page 19, we're going to discuss housing displacement risk. So what this is, so the Department of Commerce required everybody who's doing a housing action plan to map and document displacement risk. And basically what that means is if something were to happen, if rents were to go up, if there was some sort of catastrophe, would people likely lose their housing? And the way that Commerce had the guidance language written, it did not apply to communities on the east side of the state. It was more oriented. We didn't have that level of data. So there were some other communities that, Spokane in particular, that looked to other sources, and they found one with a social vulnerability index. And it's a federal agency. I kind of go in here what housing displacement risk is, but then what the methodology is on page 20, it's the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. They created a mapping system for the CDC where if something were to happen, which communities would need the greatest amount of help the quickest. And that was the social vulnerability index. And they looked at a lot of the same things that Commerce was having us look at. So it kind of already did the legwork for us. We were able to use that. Commerce has agreed to allow us to use this SBI number rating to document displaced transfer. And it uses, let's see here, socioeconomic status, household composition and disability, minority status and language, and housing type and transportation. Those four metrics, they map each one separately and then had an overall SDI value. And I have that map on this next page here. So score of zero means that you're at the least risk of being displaced. Score closer to one means that you're at the greatest risk, and combination is fairly high. Your highest was 0.9842. Your lowest was 0.9095, with an average of 0.9. So your community has a high risk of being displaced. Because of the low vacancy rate, landlords raise rent, there's a greater likelihood, a greater chance that your community members are displaced. Mm-hmm. So it really goes to show that housing is needed, and we do need to focus our efforts heavily on. And I just kind of go through that in that last little paragraph on page 20.
You know, that kind of reminded me of the floods. We did have a flood in 96. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many people, I mean, there were lots of displaced that
happened. Yeah. And the railroad tracks are pretty good for the hook, at least as it's mapped.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last little section of the land capacity analysis. So, what a land capacity analysis is really a GIS exercise, geographic information system mapping. So what we're looking at is the need for all this additional housing in your community. And what a land capacity analysis does is look to see if you have the lands available within Aquanish in order to accommodate all of the housing units that needed. What we did is we broke down, you have four zoning districts that allow residential development, R1, R2, B1, and B3. Single-family residences and duplexes are allowed in all of them. R2, B1, and B3 allow for multifamily. There's just different minimum lot sizes, open space requirements, you know, the zone. And Toppenish is unique in that, where duplexes are allowed everywhere. Most communities have zones where single-family residences only, and then other zones where you can start to build up that density. And one of the things that the land capacity analysis does is it breaks the individual lots down into four categories, whether it's vacant, whether it's developed, whether it's underdeveloped, meaning that you have a home on a double lot and you can subdivide it and build a home on it, or if it's underutilized, which means that if you have a home on it, but your lot's large enough to have a duplex or a home, so you have a 1 acre size lot, take that house down. So with that duplex being allowed everywhere, means that you had a higher number of underutilized lots than you see in other communities. But the following pages are a breakdown of the maps showing you the developed, underdeveloped, and undeveloped, and then kind of a breakdown of the different percentages of those areas. So R1, you can see that most of the lots are developed. As far as undeveloped lots, you have a handful of them. You have the one large one that's by the water tower on the north side of town. Community.
But does that
pick
into effect that some of these
laws
are
interesting?
No.
One of the thought processes behind the duplex in all our zones was, due to the fact we are an island and we're bordered, we don't have a lot of land we can annex for growth.
Yes,
we're bordered by the river and we're bordered by the res.
Yes,
and internally bordered by the reservation. So that probably should be part of our city profile.
Yes.
Because it does affect our growth and home.
Let me go back and make a note of 27.3.
I'm looking at your underdeveloped or underdeveloped. The older
But the other issue, even if it's done at all, is trust. Quite a few years ago, the Yakima County wanted to put a jail in this town. And that did not happen. Water. Even though the land was there. So, yeah, our growth is very
good. I worked for the county from 2006 up until last year. So, right at the beginning of my time.
Yes, absolutely.
What
does that mean?
So that's your school.
Oh, so that's your school.
Yeah, that's your institutional area. So that's just
new. Yeah.
Oh,
so that's just how the overlay works, is it's kind of transparent so you can look and see what's underneath it. So you have the high school, I believe that's
And you said this also took into consideration the areas that are.
Yes. Yeah, that's something that, so when we're looking at undeveloped areas, there are certain considerations, there are limitations to development. I'd have to look at your post to refresh my memory, but I know in certain areas, if you're subdividing and you're completely within the floodplain, you have minimum lot sizes of 1 acre, which really limits your density. And an idea there is to limit flood risk because FEMA has a bunch of standards that the communities that are participating in the flood insurance program, they need to show that they are taking steps to reduce that flood risk. And if they aren't, your flood insurance rates go up. And the county got in trouble where they hadn't been putting their best effort forward, and I think they were on probation for like 3 or 2, where they had to be audited to make sure that they had made corrections. So our one, so with just the simple acreage of undeveloped land with the highest density that's available through those acreages, R1 can support about 230 housing units. So mind you, that's with assuming a density of duplexes at 10 dwelling units. The R2, you can see here, not a whole lot of R2. There's a huge, it's a 60-acre parcel north of town that's zoned R2 that pretty much by itself can support 1,200 housing units. So just right there, if we were to develop the R1 and the R2 and max that out, we'd be more than covered by So this is also something that when the county is going to be reaching out and discussing your urban growth area boundaries, this is the sort of data that we're going to be looking at to see if those need to change for definition. With the lands available within city limits being able to accommodate at least residential growth, they'll look at commercial and industrial as well. But that's where they look to see if there needs to be more lands added or revisions drawn to the bump.
It's where the hops are. The elders still
so,
out.
And flood area. Flood zone.
Yeah. So you have to have the market for going houses be better.
Yeah.
No, it's not gonna happen. Yeah. Hops are booming right now.
B1 local business district. You can see they're kind of centered in the key streets or corridors. You have about 6 acres of vacant B1 lands, 118 housing units based on a density of 20 dwelling units per net residential acre. So that's where within the B1 zone, you can have that multi that would equal 20. But Commerce has its guidance for creating these land capacity analyses in maximum. It doesn't necessarily matter if that's what the market dictates to be built there, but you have to assume that, okay, if it were felt to be most dense, it can be. Then the final one is the B3 professional office district. And you don't have any vacant lands there. Most of them are developed. They're all kind of centered around the hospital. And then the underdeveloped means that there's something on them that needs some time. Again, but the fact that there's no vacancy or vacant lands in this, when we open up your and zoning ordinance, that's something that we can address and that we'd like to see more land zoning. Also, cherry pick. And the final map is that underutilized lots. This is just an exercise of looking at what lots are greater than 8,200 square feet, which is the minimum lot size for duplex that the assessor currently has shown as a single family residence. And this is the map. That so your new subdivision on the northwest side of town there, all of those are larger size lots, so they could have a duplex on them, but the reality is who's gonna put it on their house. Okay, so that's the housing needs assessment. We're gonna put a little bit more work into it and fix up some of the things that we've identified and discussed today. And then we take this information, and our next step is going to be looking at your comprehensive plan. We look at your housing element, and within your housing element, you have goals and policies that say we want to provide houses to people of this income level. And we look to see if those have been met. And then also look at things such as the zoning ordinance or your subdivision ordinance to see if there's something within those codes that may be a roadblock or a hindrance for developers actually building those. So we're gonna be starting to do that analysis and create that housing action plan. That's where a lot of the community outreach comes into play. That's where we look at some of the things we want to focus on, and then look at the housing strategy mix. So this matrix breaks things down by the community typology and then the distinct housing needs. We're going to focus on the community typology, and Coppenish fits under the small cities and towns section in the guidance materials. It gives an example of a town in Caldwell Foster, is a small city. And the town and Coppenish is very similar to that with the downtown. So, where it has typically relevant and occasionally relevant, so the typically relevant is the full circle, the occasionally relevant is the open circle. We're going to address things like reducing that minimum lot size. And so, look at that. Plan capacity analysis and what those minimum lot sizes were. I believe 7,200 square feet was the minimum lot size for a home. That's something we could look at reducing to 5,000 square feet. We're saying, being able to have smaller lots, because oftentimes one of the bigger costs of buying a home is buying all the land the house sits on.
so if you can reduce the amount of land, you might be able to reduce the housing costs, increase your renewable density limits. A lot of codes will have things like you can have multifamily up to 16 dwelling units per residential acre. And if you get rid of that, you may have a developer that wants to come in and build something like 30 dwellings. So maybe smaller apartments, more mid-rise buildings. Grandview is actually looking at something like that right now, where there's a developer that bought a couple of acres of land. And the way that Grandview's code is set up is the multifamily residential only allows 9 dwelling units per acre, where duplexes allows 10. So we actually have fewer. So we're going through a process to remove that stuff because the developer wants to put in like 36 dwelling units. So things like that. So there's just a list there. I won't bore you with the specifics, but that's what our next step is going to be, is going through and developing a housing action plan that addresses these items for the city of Toppenish, and then looking at what we can do there. The last couple of things with those community surveys, I don't think we need to go through them, but they are really telling. Just glancing through them quickly, you can see that people's priorities, they want single family homes, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and then cottage housing is a big thing that people want to see. So when we are developing our strategy, those are the sorts of things we're going to focus on. Another key takeaway is page 6 of 11 here. The question was, who's primarily responsible for solving the lack of housing and housing options? They said both government and business developers. Almost 58% of people said that. And then government alone, 23% of people said that. So that the community is looking to you, to us, to solve this problem.
Well, and I do want to mention also that one of the things that we're looking at is the housing strategy efforts here, is that most of these are, well, I think all of them, well, most of them are zero.
So once you have your housing action plan and you have adopted, yes, after that, you have this document that has goals and policies that can be used to apply for grants and other programs like that. The Department of Commerce also has a pool of monies called HAPI, Housing Action Plan Implementation, and that's to implement some of the things. So if we identify we want to open up the zoning ordinance and reduce those minimum lot sizes or get rid of those density requirements or something like that, there may be monies for us to be able to go in and do that work. If we identify that access to infrastructure is an issue, we may be able to be more competitive when it comes time to apply for grants or no or low interest loans for water and sewer, because the responses there are the community survey results, but we've also done outreach with the home builders and the realtors, and the home builders say that their number one cost that limits them from developing in communities is that cost of infrastructure, because oftentimes it's the small developers, it's not the big Hayden homes or a whole construction community that is filling the needs of smaller communities that accomplish. So they can't really write out a big check and then wait a year or so until everything's all said and done without any money. Those are some of the things we're going to be looking at, trying to find the best solution.
So what was right now? Which one? None of the above? So who's the primary responsible?
I think when it comes to it, people don't know
people think that it's going to have to be the government saying we need to prevent houses from being $430,000 for 3 bedrooms because it does not reflect. I don't know what that specific solution would be, but they're looking to policy decisions, to limitations on that being said.
Bottom line is we don't overregulate, and we have
to
let the developer look at your community and say, yeah, I would build there. I don't have a lot of damn rules I got to go by. I don't have to stand on my head.
Yeah, a lot of it's things like lot coverage, parking requirements, things like that.
Absolutely.
You know, in the survey, I would really like people to be asked, how much are you taking? You know, because I based on, you know, the graphs that we were looking at, they just don't correlate with anything that I've heard. And even the housing, like the apartments, and I think those are university apartments, but I think they rent them a little out to the public, but the ones in Yakima by the university, I mean, those are starting off at 13 for one bedroom. Yeah, and just like that is, and then also the housing cost of real estate is a top initiative. So we're seeing even new homes that are one or two bedrooms selling for close to 100. And they're selling 380, like the ones over there close to Burger Edition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, $380,000, you never heard of that in Toppenish, 10 years ago.
Well, the hope is with something like this, we'll have similar success. So when Chris and Vicky came into the community surveys, and that's where the Crusty grants came in. We were able to get CDP funding. We're hoping that this document will continue the same. Start to bring in some money. No, I got an email from your development staff. They were. Working with one of the property owners trying to develop residential development here that's looking at 40, 50, 60 units to start.
Yeah, we're really hoping there. That will.
Yeah, I think it's moving forward. There's just some stuff that's behind the curtain line.
Yeah.
The hope is that this document will open doors for a lot of them.
You know, I think, and on a side note, I have to just say this so that it goes on the record. I know that I've been having some very open discussions and have been very clear of how, look, I get, and my watch is going to go off. And my heart rate just rose as well, but with the money that was sent back from the county for homelessness, when I was looking at what some of those funds could have been used for, I was just absolutely flabbergasted and offended and just disturbed for the poorest people in our communities in our county, because some of those funds could have gone to rental assistance, but instead, under the administration of the county commissioners and their director, millions of dollars in setback. And so I look at this, and I see the need. This talks very clearly of a need. But yet, when they made comments to the paper, they say, well, there was no need. And so I just want to stress that this is not something that's going to go ignored, that those funds need to be better managed, that the community and community leaders need to hold them accountable for that, and that they need to demand that that they do a better job, because there are people that are seniors. I mean, we look at this, but the majority of the people are low income. They're seniors. They are farm workers. They're Latinos. And yet they have the nerve to say that there wasn't a need in our community. I'm disgusted. And yet when I spoke to the commissioner, they had no good answers for me. And when I asked them about accountability and who's going to be accountable for that, they had no good answers for me. And so this is, again, something that's not going to go ignored. I'm going to continue to press it. But I did want to thank you guys for the work that YBCOG is doing, because although we know the need, it's good to have it on. And like I said, in regards to renting, I know that the need is much, much greater, because people are literally being asked. And I looked, because, you know, my husband and I have been looking to get a rental property. And we're like, okay, well, and my idea is, you know, what can I do to help alleviate that need if I get a rental property? And so then I look at the loans, and I look at the interest rate, and I look at the cost of the homes that are being sold. And so I'm looking at a one or two bedroom home, and we're being told that it's going to be $280,000 for a house that we're looking to rent. So then we do the breakdown, we do the interest rates, we do how much the rent would have to be a minimum, and it's coming out to $1,600. Who can afford that? Even as people that own those homes, to rent those homes at that. And we're talking about a one-family home. We either have to have multiple families living in a two-bedroom small home, two or three families living in a two-bedroom home. I mean, it makes me emotional just thinking about that. But when we have free money and it's being sent back, and the people that are responsible to manage that money are looking at us in the face and telling us that there wasn't a need, that should really upset every single one of us and every single person that hears this. We need to pull them in. Thank you so much. Are there any other comments? No? Great. Well, with that all being said, I think we're at the end of our meeting. And I will adjourn tonight's meeting. Yeah? No,
we have one more item.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so we'll go on to item C. Thank you so much. We'll move on to item 6, AB23-014, Resolution 2023-11, approved change order for the Electrical Services for Temporary Police Department, Portable. City manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So back in August, Council approved the quote for Hemp Electric to do the exterior portion of the electrical for the temporary police building. And when they were completed with the, and they were the only responsible company that's provided a quote for the electrical work. There were three electrical contractors that were requested to provide information, and Hemp was the only one that responded. When we came near the end of the exterior, we needed to have the interior done, and to save from having to go out to rebid, we evaluated the work that had been done by Hemp and determined that we would just continue to go with them. This item should have come to council at that time, but it did not. So what we're asking as part of this is for two things, is to ratify the interior electrical work that was done in December, and then also to approve the new work that needs to be done with FutureLink, which is a subcontractor of Hemp Electric, to do the data lines, which is going to serve the create the server room, the phone and the computer wiring throughout the building. So do you have any questions on this item? Well, and next Monday will be a full update on where we're at with the police department as far as some more tighter timelines on where we're at and the next steps that we have to take to get the police department moved into their new building.
So how much was it?
What was not approved was $33,887.
So that was not counted?
Correct.
So the work's already been paid, so I didn't
know. Correct.
So how much are we?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is where the original one came in August for the 45 that council approved. That was beyond the 20,000. And as in my presentation, this should have come back to council before the work was done.
Should have?
Should have, yes. It was an oversight.
Well, so, I don't think it was an oversight. 2 weeks ago, I emailed you in regards to the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And also now I know where this is done in September. Or September, which day?
This was done in, this was December.
And then you waited this long. Right?
Well, this was our first council meeting since that time. Yes, your question did bring this forward.
It says at the bottom. Here, let's see.
Right. The original work was for the exterior portion, and that was back in August. And that was for $45,000-$47,000. Right. Yes, yes. And so when that was nearing the point to be finished, then they moved in to do the interior portion. And at that time, that's when that should have come to council for approval.
And that's not
right? Correct. That's why we're bringing it now, because it was identified that this had happened. It hadn't come to council, so we're bringing it to council now to ratify that for council to approve.
What I'm getting at is 2 weeks ago I asked you questions about it, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden now, once I bring these questions to you, now mm-hmm. I decide.
Well, no, I didn't decide to do it now. It was identified while we were going through your questions and pulling all the invoices, running reports. This invoice was identified of, okay, how did this happen? How did this work get done? How did this not go to council? This has to go to council. So it is here today because you did ask the question, which I'm glad that you asked the question.
Well, I felt like this little message you have to give.
I'm not sure what message.
I feel like you approved it and knew you did it until I actually brought it up to your attention to find you and decided to cover it over and talk about it.
So are you suggesting that the costs were approved back before December by Debbie?
Yeah, is that true?
Yes, the work was done. The contractor was approved to start work. The work was done. The invoice was paid. And when Council Pettit asked a series of questions,
mm-hmm.
and when staff and I met to go through the questions that he asked, he pulled the reports and the invoices, and this invoice was identified, was pulled out, and it was, okay, how did this happen without going to council? This has to go to council. So the first meeting that we had from that question at the study session.
Was this the only one that you guys caught back?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you guys.
You know, I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking how we kind of have to, previous city manager mm-hmm. kind of did this. But honestly, here I'm thinking, you know, this individual sitting here was actually doing two jobs at the same time. While she was trying to get the budget done, which this time the budget took far longer than it ever has before. And I, you know, I'm just, I for one, believe what she's saying. It was an oversight. I think she was doing too many jobs for the city to really keep her finger on what are we doing. And I had said that from the beginning, was I think you're doing too much. Something's going to be overlooked. And in my opinion, this was overlooked. And even though it looks like now they're trying to cover the tracks, which we are trying to cover our tracks, it's something that needs to be done. And we just like, it won't happen again because now you're only doing one job. Mm-hmm. I just think she was overwhelmed. I mean, seriously, because I watched these guys, they were working on Saturdays and Sundays, and they were putting multiple hours. Sometimes they'd be here at night, like after 8 and 9, mm-hmm. 10 at night. It's like the vibe to drop a letter off or something, and there they both were. So honestly, I believe it was an oversight. I think that they were being overworked, and because she was trying to do two very delicate jobs, it was an oversight. That's my own opinion. I know where you're coming from, because I sat the ones before for someone else. I know where you're coming from. But in this one, I really do believe there was an oversight because she was trying to do two jobs that really take a lot of time.
So what was the total altogether? I think that's in the top. So what's the total in together that we paid towards kind of electric for the work done?
For the work that's been done with everything the original, with the 40.
Plus whatever we did.
Right, it was the 48. I think I have it in the packet. The 47 that was done in August, and then the 33,887.
At the way bottom, I'm seeing $44,047 at the last page of $37,000. And that's where I'm trying to figure out what that number is, $32,000. And then whatever number this is, we're going to keep that.
So the,
that's over like $100,000 to touch that kind of way. I almost feel like it's affordability.
I think we all would have liked it not to have to be affordable, but we have had some issues with that. You know, we had already started the process of trying to get a permanent police department there, but we were stopped from doing that part. But
and we do have our consultant, Grant Osborne, has been working on the feasibility study for siting of the permanent structure.
I think my question would be if this work hadn't been done, would it have needed to be approved anyhow? Because I think in this case, there wasn't any other option. And in the information that we were given, it says that they're the ones that gave us the best. So although it does seem really, really inflated, I don't really think we had a second choice and another option.
But I'm pretty sure $100,000 for the whole, we would have to hold up. Who else would have been committed to that project? And that's the whole point of the huge.
Yeah, I think that there's, I was asking about that today and about what type of work needs to be put out for bid. And there's some things, right? There's some things that do and some things that don't need to be put out.
Right, it depends on the dollar amount. So some things we can get quotes for and some things we do have to go out for a full bid. And part of the problem that we have is our projects are required to pay prevailing wage. So a lot of the smaller companies have a hard time being able to pay the prevailing wage that is required to be paid. And we're dependent on larger companies who can pay those wages.
That then have higher costs,
right,
because of that. So that's what I was asking. I was like, well, are there local businesses that we can use that charge less? But that was the biggest thing because it's a government job. They're required to go a certain way. Again, it inflates our costs. So they're required to go a certain way with a company that's going to pay them twice as much as a local electrician company would be paying their employees. They wouldn't be paying. They wouldn't be paying minimum wage.
Now, some of the construction at the temporary building, it looked like there was nothing going on for quite a while.
That is correct, because we were waiting for Pacific Power.
Pacific Power, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a long lead time for them to come out and do the portion of the electrical work that they needed to get done in order for our part
to be completed.
So we got all the permits and everything for
all the LNI permits for electrical, yes.
Do we have a process in place, Debbie, for you to be given notice prior? For you to be able to prevent this from happening again?
Well, we've had discussions with DAF. Part of, in addition to having a lot of stuff going on, we have a lot of new staff. The department directors are all new. And even though department directors have come from other cities have different spending requirements. And, you know, that was not something that was on the department director's thoughts at that time. A lot of cities have their city managers have a significantly higher spending rate. And so the particular folks that were looking at that was not even a thought in their mind. And then the project had been approved in the budget and we had budgeted money for the construction of the temporary project. And so they're thinking.
There's money there.
Yeah, right. It's been approved, council approved it. This is where we're going. This needs to get done.
Any idea when it'll be complete so we can actually move into the building?
I can't give you that date tonight, but on next Monday, there will be a full update when Dan will be back. And so Dan and John can give an update on that.
Any other comments or questions?
Well, what would happen if we didn't approve it? What would happen?
Well, it has already been paid. The auditor would have a comment on that.
We've already approved the budget. What we're talking about is a line item.
Correct.
Basically. I mean, it's not like they're out going out there spending $50,000 and trying to hide it behind us. We approve. We, the city council, whether we like it or not, approve the temporary. We approve them to go to the electrical company. Now, at that point, it looks like somebody said, that's been approved, so I can have them work both inside and outside. That's the oversight. Correct?
Correct.
So, I mean, I don't see how we cannot approve. We basically approved it. We're talking about a line item. It wasn't an individual line item in the budget. But the overall budget was approved.
And it's not above and beyond the budget.
Correct. It's within, yes.
I do have a question though. Didn't we hire a project manager, a project oversight person at Public Works to be on top of this?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that individual's job?
Yes.
So what happened with that? If we're paying that individual to be keeping on top of these projects, what happened?
That's the part of not recognizing the city manager's approval authority.
The limit. Correct. I think what you're saying is the person who's the project director didn't know that there was a limit of 20,000.
Right.
So wherever this person came from, obviously the limit was higher.
Much higher.
So
yes.
This person thought, well, what the heck is this
in their mind. Right. And it's approved in the budget. Right.
And I'm trying to get to the point that we did hire to do this job and this person didn't. That person getting training so this doesn't happen again in the future.
Yes. All department directors have a clear understanding of what the $20,000 requirement means. And it's not per invoice, it's for combined work that's being done by the same contractor.
Then that being said, I will go ahead and make a motion to approve resolution 2023-11, authorizing the city manager to approve the change order for Cooper Hemp Electric LLC to ratify the interior electrical work in the Sousa to add on one.
Great. We have a motion on the floor by Mayor Pro Tem Jimenez, seconded by Councilman Belton, to approve resolution 2023-11 to approve the change order for electrical services for temporary police department portable. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Great. With that, we are done for this evening. Thank you, everybody, and I'll attend tonight.